This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Thanks for listening to CarCast on Podcast One.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, and welcome to T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio Podcast, the most fun you'll ever listen to while you're folding your clothes. Now let's get this straight, this is not your average podcast. T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio is super fun, super crazy, it's pretty much an in-your-face conversation. That's the good thing about us, we don't do interviews, we do conversations. All of my guests, all of my co-hosts, we chill, we drink, we play games, we have the song of the week, we have the creative curse word of the week, as long as you're having fun as our guests. Speaking of guests, each week I'm gonna go through my whole contact list and dive headfirst into the world of music, gaming, exotic cars, tech, strippers probably, doctors probably strippers that are only stripping so they can pay for tuition to become a doctor. You never know. My wife is a certified bartender. She'll make you a drink while you're here. We'll get you drunk and make you play VR after. It's a lot going on, but that's what it's all about over here at T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio Podcast. See you soon, baby!
Hey guys, welcome to CarCast, brought to you by JB Weld. JB Weld is available at jbweld.com, Home Depot, Lowe's, Walmart, AutoZone, Advanced Auto Parts, Napa, O'Reilly, Amazon, Michaels, and more. And remember, JB Weld epoxy products are proudly made in the USA. It's JB Weld, world's strongest bond.
Well, we'll get into a whole Monterey preview in this show with Alexander Weaver from RM, and a man who knows his cars. We'll talk about prices and trends and values and some funny stories along the way. First, I'll tell you about Empire Covers. Your vehicle should be treated with the respect it deserves. Unfortunately, the elements do not take vacation days. EmpireCovers.com. High-quality, affordable covers engineered to protect against rain, UV rays, tree sap, pollen, anything Mother Nature throws your way. Our listeners get 15% off with the promo code CARCAST. Worried a car cover might damage your finish? Sure, but not Empire Covers. They're fleece-lined, so they prevent scratches to your car's paint. American-made, they have their factory in Kentucky, and all the American Armor covers are made proudly in America. Plus, covers for RVs, boats, motorcycles, and more. It's Empire Covers, right, Matt?
Yeah, you know, CarCast listeners can receive free shipping plus an extra 15% off their entire order. Visit EmpireCovers.com/CarCast or simply use the promo code CARCAST at checkout. It's Empire Covers. Protect what you love.
Get it on. Got to get on a choice. We've got a mandate. Get it on. And welcome to CarCast. I'm Adam Kroll, and that's Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea.
Hello. How are you?
I'm well. Excited. Looking forward to Pebble Beach.
1 week's a countdown.
As tradition would have it, Alexander Weaver is here of RM Sotheby's, and we're going to go over some of these auction cars and much more, the market in general, because Alexander has his finger on the pulse of that patient. Good to see you, Alexander.
Thanks for having me, guys. Good to see y'all.
Yeah, a lot of cool cars coming up this year. Maybe we should speak in general terms before we get to some of the official particulars. God, I was just on Bring a Trailer before I came in. I saw a Turbo Supra, maybe a 95, went for like $201,000 or something. there's been some... we saw some Skylines go for 300 plus in recent weeks, maybe one for like 330 and the other for like 310. These are like 90s Japanese cars, you know, $200,000, $300,000, you know, with not, you know, specific history or anything, you know, not owned by Clark Gable or anything, just kind of mid 90s Japanese cars. That seems to be the market that seems to be climbing the fastest.
It really is moving, and I think honestly the stuff with with less history is better. Like, what people are really wanting to buy there are cars that haven't been modified, that have, you know, had one, you know, old man owner, and, you know, didn't have a bunch of gauges put on the A-pillar and, you know, a big double-deck CD player with a DVD screen on it and boost gauges and aftermarket wheels and Veilside body kits and all that. Not that they weren't cool.
Yeah.
But, you know, they just, nowadays people want a bone stock one. And that's what's, with low miles, and that's what's really bringing the money for that stuff.
Right. Something with a floorboard that doesn't fall out.
Yeah. Wow. If you went, you hit the NOS. That's
the NOS.
That's why you got to use the nylon nuts on those screws, on those bolts. So that seems to be an interesting subject to me. Weird, you know, cars that weren't formally collector cars. And I think what always catches everyone off guard is, you know, time marches on. You know, we're talking about cars that we think are new cars, but they're 25 or 30 years old.
Right. Yeah. I still get thrown off when somebody goes, oh, I've been doing this for 30 years, since 90-something. I'm like, man, 90-something feels
right.
Like. I always think 70s when somebody says that number for some reason. But it does throw me off. But your point about something like bring a trailer, I don't know where so many people got or why they held on to these cars that have 9 miles on it. And not just the cool cars. They'd be like, this is a Pontiac Aztec. It's got 17 miles on it, and someone's going to pay $28,000 on bring a trailer for it. I don't even know who kept it and then who buys it. But there's quite a few of these cars that are popping up with, like, no miles.
Well, are we talking, Alexander will know the answer, he'll help with the answer. Are we talking about car guys, or are we talking about folks that are seeing what's going on with the economy and wanting to put their money somewhere where they think it's A, tangible, and B, appreciating?
It's both, I think. And I think a lot of the really astute car guys are almost standing down at this point, too. Some of them are, you know, they're guys that are like, that are really into it for wanting to drive the cars, really wanting to use the cars, not looking at them as just investments. They're going, like, you know, a 2012 Porsche Turbo with a manual bringing 180 grand, you know, with 20,000 miles and no special color or anything like that. And they go, yeah, like, this was an $80,000 to $100,000 car a year ago. This doesn't make any sense. Kind of worried. So there, you know, I think we are seeing a lot of people just watching the economy go, you know, bonkers right now. And everybody's going, all right, well, this is a good place to put their money, all the inflation, all the cash out there, you know, at least they're having some fun with this stuff. Right.
Yeah, so, theoretically.
Yeah,
I mean, so if they drive them.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like...
I guess buying
the Aztec
and selling
guy, maybe
it.
Not.
Yeah, that's
maybe
the pressure of getting the car with 900 original miles from 1994. It's like you're kind of scared to take it out and have it cross over 1,000, you know? But let's talk about some of the cars RM has coming up at the top of the list. I think the jewel in the crown this year is the Porsche 917K.
Yeah, yeah, and it's just... The car is actually at our office here in LA, and we're really happy to have it there. And it's such a spectacular thing to see in person. And you've seen them at the track, and they just sound incredible. And they're, you know, really an amazing piece of engineering, and the way those motors are built, and what they did in period, and the history on this car with the McQueen ties to it, and Le Mans, and all that. It's a really special piece.
And it's in the Gulf livery.
Yeah, it matches your building.
Which you always want. I mean, there's a few of those cars in sort of funky town livery.
Yeah.
And the psychedelics ones are pretty cool, too. The hippies.
Yeah, I mean, and they're great, and they have history and all that stuff. But when you think of that car, you just think about that livery.
Yeah.
Pure and simple.
Yeah, but, you know, we don't have a Gulf livery car, so we might repaint the building Hawaiian Tropic.
You might get a lot more visitors that way, too.
We kind of thought about BMW art car, but nobody here is that talented to paint the building that way. So maybe just...
Well, I think they'll... I feel like Warhol and all those guys just got their assistants to paint it.
That's right.
One of the cars that I don't think it's on our list, but Matt and I have been talking about is that Ferrari 512 race car.
Oh yeah, the BBLM.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Man, I can't figure out if that is a car that I think is so cool, Or it's like, you know, looking at an old Playboy or something, like when you were in high school. Like, is that my wheelhouse?
Yeah.
Or is
yeah.
this universal? But it,
I can see where you're coming from, but we had that car out at Willow Springs about a month ago with John Morton driving it,
mm-hmm.
who ran it in period. And that'll go back, and maybe that'll be like the pages of that Playboy coming to life for you a little bit. But it's then you're like, all right, this is unbelievable. It's so fast. It sounds so good. And John was so excited to be in it, too. So when you put an old driver that was in that car in period back in it, and he comes out like smiling like a little kid, it's so exciting to see.
It's such a cool piece.
Yeah, it's a cool piece.
It's just kind of, it kind of has all the things that make a car look good. And it was just in the right period coming off the 70s into the 80s, you know, as you get too far in the 80s, the look kind of suffered a little bit, but those cars are so cool. There's always been a couple of those guys in my run group, I feel like, in the past. There's definitely been those guys out there, and just the, was it a naturally aspirated, it must be a V12. It's not a flat 12?
I think it's a flat 12.
Yeah, it's a naturally aspirated flat 12.
That rear photo looked like flat 12.
Yeah, it's a flat 12, and it just the sound that comes out of that exhaust.
When you guys
race that one. He raced that car a lot and just recently did a cosmetic restoration on it. So you may have raced against this specific car.
I'm sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Because there's not that many of them out there. But and some of them are like in a blue livery and stuff like that. But yeah, this one I raced again was in red. So that's a cool piece we'll be keeping our eye on.
When you click through the catalog, you guys listening, you click through the catalog, you think Ferrari. It's going to look like a Corvette at first glance, so pay attention to the titles because it's pretty unique. The front end of this car is really unique.
Yeah, and that car has Le Mans history, right?
Yeah. Yes, it does. And you know, like you were saying, like it does have that really long overhang, and it yeah. does look like, you know, like there could be a motor up front as well as in the back almost.
Yeah, it does.
It kind of looks like the Nissan, honestly.
Which,
the 90s car that you have.
Oh, yeah, like
similar
the 2
body
plus
2.
Shape.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Like
the silhouette of it, I would
yeah.
say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, a little more of the twin turbo car, the 79, the big.
Yeah, okay.
It's got a little bit of that.
Yeah, anyway, cool piece.
It's
caught
cool,
my eye immediately. I think that's a... What's the estimate? Is it 3.5 to 4 or 3 to 3.5?
It's around that in the 3-ish range. I think it might even start a little under 3.
I think it's 3 to 3.5
is what we got on the website here. Now we got the numbers on the website.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you're constantly updating. Like we like that you guys have started, and the other guys as well, have started putting things up on the website as they sort of get consigned. It used to be us texting you going, when's the catalog going to be posted? When's the catalog going to be posted? And you're like, it's usually a few weeks out before the auction. But now it kind of gives us something to log into the website like every week to see what has been added. And it's been, I kind of like that version of it, by the way.
All right, good. Yeah. We'll try to keep it trickling in for
you.
We do like that version
of it.
Yeah,
I know he does. He
once,
calls every week. We're like, do you see this added to the site? We get the press release for it and like it's added to the site.
All right, good.
Well,
right.
Once you get about 6 weeks out, then almost on a daily basis, a couple of cars will pop up. And yeah. I don't do it weekly. I'll do it daily just to see what's popped up while I was sleeping the night before. I might take a Sunday off just because sometimes not so much action on a Sunday. But
right.
They'll just keep popping up. Also, I know you got a lot of cool... I think you got a whole collection of Jags and... Is it Aston and Jag?
Yeah, high volume of Aston specifically, but it was a dear friend of RM's, Paul Andrews, who passed away a few months ago, and we're selling his whole estate collection on Thursday night. So we added just a Thursday night auction of just his cars. It's about 25 cars, but some really fantastic examples from Aston specifically, and then some great Jags, Bentleys, even some like American Hot Rods and stuff too. But all the stuff that came from Paul, and you know, he was an avid rally guy too. So the DB4 GT Lightweight, that went on a lot of rallies. The D-Type went on a lot of rallies.
I was clicking through his collection. Some really cool stuff. Yeah. A good eye, good taste.
Another Porsche-related question, which I'll tease, which is, you guys have a Group C 956, 1983 Porsche, and it's, I think, $4-5 to $6 million is the estimate. And then you see 962s, and those are, $1 million, $1.5 million. I mean, it's all about the history, I guess. But I'm curious, and I'll tease it, the 956 Group C versus the 962, why is there that, $3-4 million gap in there? They feel like, ostensibly the same car, or at least close to it. Don't answer. First, let me tell you about AIR Medcare Network. Health insurance doesn't always cover the full cost of an emergency medical flight. Even with comprehensive coverage, you could get hit with substantial copays and deductibles. Plan ahead in an emergency. AIR Medcare Network's highly trained crews provide air medical transport to the nearest and most appropriate trauma center. With AIR Medcare Network, with your membership, you pay no out-of-pocket expenses for the flight. A AMCN membership covers your entire household for as little as $85 a year. Secure your financial peace of mind. CarCast listeners get up to a $50 e-gift card with a new membership. So visit airmedcarenetwork.com/CarCast. Use the offer code CARCAST and get that gift card with AIR Medcare Network. So the 962 versus the 956.
So you're looking first at a Group C car versus just an IMSA car.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a big thing in racing circles. Obviously, you understand the difference between Group Cs and IMSA cars and one, that ran Le Mans, things like that. So and again, it comes down to history, too, like you said. So I think there is a big differentiator there in value, for sure. Is it justifiable? That's kind of, beauty's in the eye of the beholder, right? But I also see that the 956 is something that you kind of you put away, and that's just like that's a really, really important thing to have long term. And it's kind of like comparing a 288 GTO Evolution to a regular 288 GTO. You got such a huge difference. And if you look at it, they look like the same car.
Mm-hmm.
Or very similar. This one's got a little different body kit on it or something like that. So, it's really getting into esoteric details, but I think that's, kind of why we're offering this kind of stuff, too. We try to get into the stuff that is, super special. And another example here is the 68 Porsche 911R that we have. Why is a 911R worth, $4.5 million versus an ST that's worth $1 million? It's kind of, they're very similar, dichotomies, I think.
Yeah, well, the $4 million Porsche is pretty low production, right?
Yeah, and the Group C 956 is a pretty low production as well, and very low for what is actually left out there that's any good, too.
Mm-hmm.
There's not, I don't know if there's a dozen that are really good cars out there. And with this history, far less, too.
This car has a couple Le Mans appearances.
Yes.
I can't remember. I mean, it didn't win Le Mans, but it did well or was, competitive or finished or I can't remember all the nuts and bolts because I always read everything up on the cars and then I just go ahead and spread them all onto every car, so I can never remember exactly.
Yeah.
But there is, in the theme of Le Mans, Le Mans has gone from, Le Mans winner to Le Mans class winner to ran at Le Mans finished fifth to showed up at Le Mans to practiced at Le Mans.
Registered, but didn't make it.
Driven by a guy who did drive Le Mans, even though this car never drove Le Mans.
Driven by a spectator to Le Mans, to watch Le Mans.
Well, the Le Mans...
A guy who once Googled
the the value of Le Mans is so strong in this market that everyone is trying to get some, connection to it. in always trying to sort of paint, push the car that direction. Here's a question that's you're uniquely qualified to answer once again. I was speculating about this on my show, which is I start reading descriptions, and in the last couple of years, I've seen a lot of descriptions say, you know, it was originally bought for $7,000 in Pompano Beach, yeah. And then that guy sold it for $14,000, and anyway, the estimate is 3.7.
Yeah. You know?
So my first thought was...
Yeah, we talked about this last week, I think, or the week before.
Right.
Yeah.
My first thought was like, is that a good thing? Why is that there? It wasn't there in the past, but it's the notion that, well, here's what it was, here's what it is now, and imagine where it's going to be, you know, when your kids inherit it.
I don't know if that's necessarily the notion or if it's we've been able to dig up more history on the cars and we just want to share with people, you know, kind of put it into perspective in the year that it was bought, though. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, was it $7,000 when, you know, a Chevy was two, you know, or was it $7,000, you know, when
right.
it was 4 years old after it had been $10,000 new, you know, like
right.
had it lost value and stuff. I think it's more about putting it into the perspective of the time and what other stuff was then or what it had been or what it, you know, came, you know, within the next few years.
I think we were talking about it being the history. It is something that you were able to research and dig up, and it becomes part of the story of that car. But yeah, we were kind of
You said it was a pure money grab.
And I was like, yeah, because at one point we were like, well, if the current owner had bought it for 60, it's 3.5. Does he need 3.5? It feels like a little rich.
I
could offer him 90,000. I feel like 90,000 is a hefty little, you know, markup.
I think it's there just to piss off the kids of the guys sold it for 14.5 in 1972.
Right. Well, it also goes to, you know, you say, okay, I want to see service records for this car too, you know, and the value of the service records is meaningful to you, isn't it? Like,
mm-hmm.
And if it had $10,000 worth of work and done in 1980, that was a lot of work done in 1980 too. So
yeah, right.
it's, you know, you want to see the values of what was spent on a car, what somebody paid for, or, hey, you know what, the guy paid $7,000 for it, but like, you know, most of them were going for 15. Like, maybe it was just a pile of crap. I don't know. You know,
right.
Or it
right.
was a really great example because the rest of them were going for $3,000. So
I think it's a money grab.
Hit your spot. Hit your spot, Matt.
Yeah,
and we'll
all right.
keep the party going.
Let me tell you guys about our friends over at Geico. You can either own your home or rent your home, and it can be quite a bit of work. But you know what's easy? It's bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. And we know that's a good thing because you already have so much to do around your home already. So just go to geico.com and get a quote and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com.
I think... and you're going to, well, a couple things. Seems like there's a lot more no reserve popping up these days than in, you know, in the past. Is that a trend you think we're heading toward?
We have, for some of our bigger sales, which is the Monterey, the Arizona, the Amelia Island, they kind of have thresholds for no reserve stuff. And for Monterey,
thresholds meaning
anything under $250,000, basically, in Monterey has to be offered without a reserve.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, that's, you'll notice that all the lower value relatively, you know,
right.
the stuff under 250 is offered without reserve. So as far as beyond that, I think with today's market, we know that our auction, if you're bringing a car to our auction, you know, it's going to bring the money. Like, it's going to bring at least what it's, you know, it's going to bring more than wholesale that day, and it's going to probably bring more than retail that day too. So I think people are confident in our abilities to market the cars. And they also know that running it without a reserve does bring a lot more attention.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about it right now, aren't we? So, like, you know, I mean, yeah. You look at, you know, some of the big cars in the Andrews Estate collection, like most of that stuff is offered without reserve, and they know that it does bring a better interest to the cars. They know that the cars are being marketed appropriately and that we're going to work to sell them. And, you know, get them as much money as we possibly can, too. Because at the end of the day, you know, the more we get for them, the more we make, too.
Right. Let me ask you about the live events versus the online events now. I'm not just talking about, like, the online competitors. I'm talking about, I kind of feel like you guys, you know, Gooding, whatever, all the big auctions were thinking about online auctions at some point, and now we're sort of forced into it.
Yes.
Right? So you didn't really have much of a choice. We had a pandemic. You guys were like, hey, we're going to do this anyway. We might as well do it now. But it seems like it worked out well.
So we had started our online presence, you know, I would say November, December of 2019, you know, 4 months kind of before lockdown here. Mm-hmm. And we, when lockdown hit, I think we had sold a total of about 12 cars online in our online auctions, something like that, 15 cars. And then we'd done some memorabilia and stuff like that because that's a great place to sell memorabilia. And within, I think, 30 days of the lockdown happening, we had sold about over 200 cars online.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So we were able to shift, you know, specifically one of our auctions that was supposed to be a live event, we were able to shift that into an online sale. And, you know, I think that that really kind of kicked us into high gear, and we were able to make that change and switch over.
So what's going to be the plan going forward? You're going to have some key live events and then maybe more often a few online events?
That's what we've been tracking for the past, you know, 9 months or so now, is we're trying to do an online event pretty much once a month. Last week of the month, there is an online auction that, you know, is open for 7 days for bidding, and we kind of go through those cars. And that allows us to, you know, if people don't want to, you know, do the shipping to a live event, or were booked up for a live event, or they were too late to submit for a live event. And it kind of, we try to keep, you know, the top cream for the events, for the live events. So not to say that we don't have great stuff in the online business at all, but
it's a business model. There's margins there.
Yeah.
Like you said, it could cost $3,000 to bring a car to a live event, and if it's a, you know, $500,000 car, that still makes a difference.
Yeah,
you know, like that's
and
if it doesn't sell, you got to bring it home.
Yeah, and our, you know, realistically, our live events are pretty expensive to put on. I mean, you've been to our Monterey events, you've been to the Arizona events, like you can see that. Like,
yeah.
Renting those hotels and going through all the production side, which people don't realize, you know, before we even sell a car, we've spent a lot of money and resources and time to put all that together. So,
well, at the risk of giving a plug to your competition, because I can't remember who's putting on this auction, but there's an auction coming out of Europe with a ton of race cars in it, and I think it's toward the end of the year. So Alexander's looking confused, so it's probably not an RM thing. And I can't remember. It reminded me because it does have a 512 Ferrari race car in
there. No, that is us. That is the Geek Us collection. So we're having a collection sale in France.
That is a shitload of cool race cars.
Oh, no, it was amazing stuff. And talk about great. The guy that owns it all, the guy that we're selling it for, had great Le Mans stuff. Loves Le Mans.
Yeah.
Like, he's been into Le Mans history for 30 years, 40 years, trying to buy all those great Le Mans
cars.
Have
you seen that?
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, what you doing, man?
I've been busy.
I'm always jumping ahead a few months and seeing what's coming down the road. And I believe that's a lot of no reserve stuff.
Yes,
that,
and we're doing it at the track. The auction's going to be at the track, not at Le Mans. No, at one of the other tracks.
Spa. No, that's not
a French track, and we're going to do it there. And as the auctioneer is doing it, the car will be making a lap. Instead of going over a podium, it's going to be going around.
Oh, I see. So now you get to hear it. It can't be shit. Your stuff's got to run.
Yeah.
You can't be pushing this jalopy out there.
Yeah, it is.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's 19th of November.
All we got to do
Paul
is
Ricard.
Go to France.
Is it the Circuit Paul Ricard?
Oh, right. Yeah, it's just so much stuff without reserve, and some of this stuff.
Like the Issa Griffo.
Your favorite. No, Matt.
That 512.
You missed your Jag.
There's the Jag, the XJ220.
In race trim.
Well, you've got one you got the street car in Monterey, which I like, and I love it in race trim.
Yeah, pretty awesome race trim.
Don Law must have worked on that car.
I'm sure he did, yeah.
Right. If it's a racing XJ220 in Europe, it's got somewhere Don Law has been breathed on that thing.
Yeah. Sun's probably
he gave it a proper restoration.
Yeah, the estimates aren't up yet, but
yeah, look at that car. Tell me that car's not badass.
It's a great shape for a car.
It really is.
In a way, you know, we're all just heaping praise on the 512. This is sort of an evolution of that. It's the same thing. It's the long front nose, big, you know, mid-engine or rear. Yeah, mid-engine, long tail section. It's just that it's a sort of version of that car, but it's a great looking car. And this one probably ran Le Mans, or
I mean, and just
so much of this stuff was just Le Mans.
The green,
stuff, right?
Sort of this British racing green, and like it's a cool looking car. This car, yeah. This car is going to get.
So
some
did
attention.
This fella pass away?
No.
He's just saying, I'm liquidating.
One of these kind of guys that, you know, as we see often, they figure out what they like. They kind of go through it. They get all this stuff together. And then they go, you know how hard it is for me to maintain all this stuff and make sure that it's all going to run across the track, you know, when it comes auction time. So it's more of a consolidation exercise for him.
Right.
You know, sell some of, you know, sell 40 cars and get down to, you know, a great 8 cars.
Oh, so he keeps a couple of the favorites.
Oh, so this is his junk you're selling.
No, we're working with him to find him a few real gems right now. Right. Some like crazy right. stuff. So
I just thought maybe this was
he's got
leftovers.
A Celine.
That S7R is cool.
That is cool. Yeah. But I mean, even the 430, the Ferrari 430 in race trim is bad.
Everything
that's
in race
cool
trim.
And that's cooler. A cool looking Celine.
I guess a ton of Le Mans.
Oh my God, look
history.
At that engine.
That gold foil in the engine.
Yeah, click back that engine real quick.
Yeah, it's a
look at that.
Yeah, this guy really has good taste, and he bought these cars well.
Yeah,
and this is an interesting auction to keep your eye on if you like Le Mans, especially.
Everyone's like, I wish this guy was my dad. Right up until he consigned the entire collection at RM, and he's like, right. What the hell?
Yeah, this is an exciting. You're gonna fly out for that one.
I have a baby due on December 8th,
oh, really?
So I don't know if I'll be able to get the permission to
You're
go.
Fine. Yeah, you'll make
yeah.
it.
Yeah, that's what they all say.
Oh, there's the Aston DB9 R.
Yeah.
There's the lipstick in the front. That was the car that we thought we were going to steal at Monterey. And it went for like 9 times the budget. It was the coolest car. Is that the same one?
I don't think so. That's a different one. But still, there's only a, I don't know, 10 or so DBRS9s, I think.
It's that Aston Martin Racing Green that just
that's what does
just
it.
Crushes just, it.
And there's something about the lipstick on the cars as well, which is a weird design thing. You're like, it works.
Yeah.
Yeah, the other one I think was yellow
it had
lipstick.
Yellow lipstick in the front. But yeah, that's a real cool piece. Yeah, a lot of good stuff coming across that auction. So I'm definitely going to be watching that. Got to come out with the estimates.
Yeah.
I was curious what the estimates are and all
this. So estimates.
Oh, and it's got the Holman Moody honker.
Well, yeah.
That was featured in the Paul Newman doc.
Yep.
That was the Mario Andretti.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Car,
that's why
right?
we saw this. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a Can-Am car from the 60s. Mm-hmm. I mean, judging by the Hilborn and injectors and everything. It's a cool piece, but I think Mario Andretti drove that car. Or in the doc, at least he said we put Newman in and he drove Paul around to track in it or something.
Yeah, but I think Andretti drove it and Newman sponsored put
it. Oh,
yeah,
it has Paul Newman's name in the front of it. Yeah. Estimate on this car, what do you think?
I'm not sure. And, what you know, talking about the estimates, what we really, you know, we're looking at November here. You know, I mean, if we had put estimates on the Monterey cars back in January, we'd be way off right now. So that's why we kind of wait, you know, we want to wait and we have an idea of kind of roughly where we're going to be, but we try to land, you know, when we know firmly what the market's going to be, especially after seeing what happens in Monterey next week. You know, that'll
give
us a good.
Yeah, that is actually a good point.
Good
Monterey's
going to
be
there.
An indicator for something like this collection.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. It'll, yeah, and where is, in your estimate, where is the collector car market heading?
You know, I think that's a really big question. I think, if anything, it's stable to up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I hate to say this. Oh, it's just going up. It's just going up and be that guy. But like,
well, it's been fantastic the last
so
year.
So I like to say if we stabilize,
that's
we're
right.
doing
it's,
great.
It's got to correct a little bit. But if it's gone up 60%, it could correct 15 to 20%. It's not gonna,
and we're fine with that.
Yeah, you know? Right. Because so. There's some pretty, but like to your point, what you were saying at the beginning of the show was, there are a lot of collectors, customers of yours, that have been looking at these cars and going, "Oh, this is now a lot of money. I don't want to buy it. This is a lot of money.
Yeah.
I'm either going to invest in something else or I'm going to wait and see if this corrects, you know, by some significant percentage.
Yeah. Yeah, that happens. And we also have guys that are, you know, saying along the same line, but on the sell side. They're, mm-hmm. you know, and people are worried about, you know, tax implications coming up and things like that that they have to, you know, talk to their accountants about. And
that's right. Everyone's got to hide their cash.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Hit your spot. I'm going to tease the Ferrari Daytona because I'm obsessed with that car.
Well, let's just say for some ungodly reason, you couldn't make it out to Monterey Car Week. Well, there's another good event. It's the Rod and Custom. The Good Guys Rod and Custom Association is coming to Spokane, Washington. It's the 19th CPP Great Northwest Nationals. It's the Spokane County Fair and Expo Center, August 13 through 15. It's a big show. You want to check it out. It's over 1,500 classic cars and trucks on display with an indoor exhibit, burnout competition, vintage dragster exhibition as well. You can bring the whole family. There's live entertainment. There's a kids zone. There's the Pinstripers Brush Bash, which is actually very cool when you see these guys do this very, very quickly. The model car and pedal car display is always fun as well. So this is what you do. You go to goodguys.com. It's good-guys.com. Use promo code CARCAST. You get $5 off your spectator ticket. Children under 6 are free, but go to goodguys.com. Use promo code CARCAST.
I always, getting back to the Daytona, I'm always, I'm obsessed with these cars because they just won't budge. Like they got to... They got to, you know, 9, even knocking on the door of $1 million. And look, the front engine Ferraris. Like, I love this car.
I'm a big fan of front engine Ferraris. And I then love the long
They drop down to 550 or whatever, and they just won't move. And I can't, I have a semi-obsession with cars that just don't seem to move, especially when stuff sort of moves up around them. I mean, you think about the Toyota 2000 and stuff like that. I don't even see one of those for sale anywhere anymore because they drop down. But I mean, how do you, you know, prognosticate or how do you speculate on a car like this? Or how this one always fascinates me because it just sits at, you know, 5.5.
You know, like you said, they went up, they came back down, they've kind of just leveled out. I think, you know, 300 SLs have done the kind of the same thing.
300 SLs for sure.
300 SLs for sure.
I would say Dino.
Dino's a bit. Dino's kind of had a little hot minute in the past year. It was kind of a strange movement on the Dinos. The 330 GTCs, too, which is, you know, I kind of put a 330 GTC, 365 GTC, Daytona kind of all in the same bucket, which I think all of them are great driving cars, and they're stunning to look at. I love those cars personally, all of them. So,
I don't know. Sit there for a while, and I mean, look, as Adam has said a lot of times, if you're going to sell it, it's a layup. Like, you know what it's going to get.
Yeah.
Because it's just the market. That's what
it's
going to get.
Yeah, run a no reserve.
Like, that's it. If you have a like, if you have an SL, if you have a Gullwing or even the Roadster, like, you kind of know what it's going to get.
Yeah,
right. I don't think the yellow does this helps this car much. But
Matt doesn't like yellow cars, but wait, you see the BRE in yellow.
Yeah,
that looks good.
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
well, it's not all
you
yellow.
Gotta see that.
Yeah,
it actually looks pretty good.
What we're sort of saying is a guy like you, maybe me and Matt, on a Gullwing or a 300 SL or a Daytona or even a Dino could probably get within $9,000, like one way or the other, of a $500,000 car or $300,000, or in the Mercedes case, it's like
$1 million,
over $1 million bucks. You could still get within like $22,000 one way or the other in guessing it. And you might not be able to pull that off with the Bizzarrini or something of that ilk. So let's talk about me. Because there's the BRE in yellow.
Oh, that looks great.
By the way.
Yeah. It's mostly white.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
to be fair.
The thing I love about this car is everyone's going to think it's a tribute car.
That's right. Adam loves that. He's the value has gone down significantly because people think it's a tribute car.
Yeah. Somebody did a tribute BRE car in yellow.
Yeah.
Because that's what other choice would you have if you saw this car?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I got a shot of the roof, Chris, but the roof, you'll really appreciate Pete Brock when you paint one of these cars and you just start getting into all his crazy detail everywhere and just the way he did things. it really,
his mind just worked differently, like completely. Yes.
It's different between, like, I don't know, a lot of racing cars, the livery is, some are cool, but some are just kind of purpose. You know, these are the sponsors, this is the thing. And when you take somebody like Pete Brock, who is a car designer, and then you said, hey, you're going to do livery on the race cars. You know, another guy that does really well is Dave Merrick, our friend from Acura. He's been designing cars. He designs the livery of race cars way more than you think. Like, almost everything out in NHRA.
Really?
Yeah, Dave Merrick is an incredible. He loves doing it. He's like, oh, this is going to be a cool-looking racing car. So I think when you take a designer, like a car designer, you know, and give them the opportunity to do something with it, because they really start to think about the proportions and the lines and the, and you know, I was sitting in New York with a guy with Pete Brock, and he's talking about, he's like, so many cars with the black wheels, and the wheels are such an important part of the car, and this is why we do them this color and this size and this, you know, and we accent, you know, the spokes and stuff. He's got just an appreciation for some of the elements. And on this car, this BRE car, you see that. You're right. How he divided the roof and the yellow and the white and the stripes. And he's very particular about where every line went on it.
And Danny blacked out certain parts of it, like the rocker panels.
Yeah.
I mean, if in fact that car has rocker panels, I know it does. Yeah. But it's got he'll black that out to make it look lower, I think,
to
we're talking
about. To make
it look
lower, to make, give the body line more of a squished look, you know, sort of a chop look to it. And like, you've seen cars that have like a little bit of a roundness to the door, but they add a little bit of a fade or a little bit of metallic on the lower portion to give it a darker appearance, to give it, it sort of implies there's shadows on it, even when there isn't shadow on it. It's some cool stuff.
And I think, getting back to the rockers, I he may have been the first guy to carve out that floor jack hutch for so the car was too low, or they jacked it up from that little side hutch. And then thinking about it, I think the first car to have the air jacks, Matt, was Alexander.
Oh, I was going to say, on that car, I think it was a visual aspect. So you know where the jack is going to go without having to look under the car for the pad. So
And it was fast. Whatever it was the tenth of a second faster, cut out a little weight. Who cares, you know? Air jacks, first car.
Yeah, first car with air jacks. Let me think about this.
You guys have had all the clues you need.
It's got to be... I feel like it's something that Brock probably raced.
Well, now we're getting somewhere.
and then it's escaping me. Not the... What's the
Cobra.
Was it the Daytona? I was going to say
I
think it was the Daytona.
Yeah, I think well, first off, who knows what how legends have it. But I think that car's attributed with the... first car to have the air jacks built into it. So
you know what? Because they do have an air jack point on the side of the hood.
Right.
Right. And that, like, there's that one, like, rectangular vent on the sides of them. And I think there is an air jack hose there.
Chris, what do you think is the first racing car to use air jacks?
We're talking...
Don't Google it, Chris. We just want your honest opinion.
We're talking mid-60s.
I'm trying to figure it out. Yeah, yeah. I think that's in one of those vents on the sides. I think you're right.
Yeah, I had heard that. So the point is, well, it's mid-60s, and I think if memory serves, it is the first one.
You think they debuted at Le Mans with that, and the Italians bitched? Like, you can't do that.
Probably. Well, Pete, I mean, just to show you that Brock was, all show but all go as well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't just an aesthetic for him. He's a true pioneer. Do we have Max Pattison pictures of the 911S, which we're working on now? I think that my favorite part of Monterey is prepping the car to go to Monterey. I'm not sure why I enjoy that process so much.
We might want to get Alexander's estimate on the car before we bring it, just in case it's a really good number.
Just drive it from the track
right to
the auction.
Right to the auction. Late edition. Here we go.
Recently ran.
Good.
We don't typically get those. It's usually the ones that stopped running on the track that they want to sell.
Yeah.
Well, it's We've rerouted the exhaust because it wasn't period correct. So Sean's been sawing away at the headers over there.
Yeah, I saw that.
Figuring that out, which is nice. Wasn't supposed to come out sort of tandem in the middle. I don't know, at some point.
Right.
That happened. So we spread it out sort of like an RSR or as it was
back
in the day.
Sean being Sean, he like already made a jig for one of the headers and he was getting it all.
Yeah. So we're bringing it straight out the back versus we.
That looks good.
Yeah. We glassed up the center. It had a cut out in the center.
It was center exhaust and notched. So we had to quickly change it back.
Yeah. I like, pink doesn't seem like a great color for a livery on a car, but if you look at that car, it's kind of good looking. It's got kind of funky, kind of got the 70s vibe.
But when you see it,
you see it in person. What's interesting is RSR rear fenders, but not the big RSR front fenders, and it just looks like you're going to get so much rear traction and nothing in the front. Like I just feel like that first lap is going to be a bit of a learning curve.
Have you driven it yet?
No. So
he's going to go to Home Depot later, though. So
okay.
Yeah, I'm going to make a run. Yeah, well, that's what Thursday practice is for.
Yeah.
Although, I may bring this up at the driver's meeting, which is, hey, all the assholes in my run group, let's not get fucking black flagged during Thursday's practice.
Yeah.
Because they're all driving.
It just like that.
Yeah. They're all driving. They're driving the cars they drive every year. I always bring something new.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm going to, you know, we're not racing. I'm just trying to dial myself in here a little bit on Thursday. We'll get 10, maybe 12 laps in, and then we can come back on Friday and qualify. But the guys I run with, some of those guys are such assholes that they go out on Thursday and they start racing right from fucking Jump Street.
Yeah.
And then someone gets into somebody or gets off the track or something. And at some point they're like, all right, everyone back. Or it's all right.
You got four laps in, forget practice now.
Sometimes two.
Yeah.
Like you're barely up to temperature and these guys are going ballistic. And I get it. They want to get their yayas off and everything. But just go race the clock or something for third. It's a practice session. It's not going to do anything. All the other ones are qualifying races, you know, whatever. So let's not get black flagged. Let's get our 10 laps in. Let's get up to temperature. Let's shake these cars out. And then Friday morning.
Yeah.
I'll say there's an 11% chance of that happening.
It's so
which side of it? 11% that somebody will get black flagged? 11%
chance that your comment in the driver's meeting, everyone's going to be like, yeah, I agree. Let's all do that. And then they follow that rule. 11%. And people are like, I wasn't going that fast.
They just can't help themselves.
We still got black flagged, right?
They cannot help themselves. It's first thing in the morning on Thursday.
Yeah.
Just get the car up to temp or figure it out.
I was at Laguna a couple weeks ago. We were doing a track event with a bunch of guys. It was a big group, and it was a bunch of supercars and stuff like that. And a buddy of mine shows up, and he brings the best car there, basically. And they're talking about passing. And they're like, okay, can you, you know, we're not using blinkers because sometimes people get confused. Let's get an arm out the window, you know, left pass, right pass, point by in the corners.
This is for when someone's filling up your mirror.
Yeah.
And you're going to tell
point
them
by
they can
and
pass.
Stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah. So pass on the straights, no problem. But in the corners, let's get a point by. And my buddy, he's standing in the back, hadn't said anything. And this is, you know, 8:30 in the morning. He goes, can I use my blinkers? Because what if you can't reach out your window? And I go, what do you mean? Why can't you reach out your window? He goes, like, if you can't reach out your window, where are you sitting? He goes, the middle.
McLaren.
Yeah.
He's in his
F1.
He's
F1. As soon as you said can't reach your window, I thought it's either Matt or this guy's driving.
And the whole crowd just like, oh, you know, just like
that's a good total mic drop right there. Starting the day off right. You got to run with a friend. You got to bring one of those little plastic, the little grabby things with the dinosaur head at the end.
You
got to hold that little dinosaur head out the window. And
those
F1s. Is there, is Gooding have one of those?
Yeah.
Who has one of those? Gooding?
Yeah, they got theirs.
They have a no mile car.
I know.
Oh, really?
So we were talking about no mile cars earlier.
I mean, is that thing $20 million?
Yeah.
I would say that owner is lost his mind by never driving it, but I hate to like meet the guy and he has no legs.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, my bad.
Can't reach the window or the pedals.
Can't reach the window or the pedals. Like, what whoops.
Is that literally a no, I mean, not no mile,
it's
but
like
I mean.
It's 200 or 300 miles on it or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And
which is basically like what they got delivered with, really.
Right.
You know, less miles. So,
Jesus Christ.
Do with it?
I don't know.
Sell it.
Yeah, you sit on it
for
like that
$20
million.
Yeah. You make $18 million on it. I don't know.
Well, it could
but
break the bank.
He also could have driven it 10,000 miles and made
it. Wouldn't have made a difference.
$17 million on it.
Yeah, it wouldn't
Something like that, maybe.
If he had 6,000 miles on it, it probably wouldn't have made that sure.
And a guy that sat on a car that was that value for that long, if he had driven it 10,000 miles, that $1 million that he might not have made probably doesn't make a huge difference in his lifestyle.
How many of those...
Unless he inherited the car, it's the kid.
Yeah. I'll tease this. How many of those did they make? I mean, they made a... I'll let you ruminate on it.
There's a couple iterations,
But those cars seem insanely expensive to circle back to, you know, mid-early 90s cars, like going... berserk. Those cars are going berserk. And are they going berserk because they're going berserk? Like, does it become a little bit of a frenzy on a certain car? Or is there, you know, we all know they're spectacular cars, but they are, you know, twice as much as other spectacular cars.
Oh, yeah.
And by the way, they're three or four times as much as some spectacular cars. I'm just curious if you think it begats itself, like there gets to be an energy around it. Hold there on. Is. Tease it. First, let me tell you about JB Weld. DIYers and pros have trusted JB Weld for 50 years. Plus, projects big and small, home or garage, world's strongest bond. We're proud to have JB Weld Epoxy Adhesive as a sponsor. I personally know the owner, hung out with him at his booth in SEMA, and that's why they're sponsors. So if you have DIY projects, automotive, crafts, plumbing, marine, and more, JB Weld. You use it on metal, wood, plastic, ceramics, glass. I use it to fix Sonny's tennis shoe. I use it to fix a piece of stonework at my house. I use it to fix my daughter's weird cold roller thing that goes in the freezer. I don't know what it is, but I fixed it with JB Weld, man. So
I don't know what this is. I'm gluing it.
Well, somebody dropped it. It broke in half, and they just left it on the counter. Of course, I've never been thanked for it, but I JB Welded it together. And they also acquired Herculiner. So it is JB Weld, right, Matt?
Yeah, you know, JB Weld is available at jbweld.com, Home Depot, Lowe's, Walmart, AutoZone, Advanced Auto Parts, Napa, O'Reilly, Amazon, Michaels, and more. And remember, JB Weld epoxy products are proudly made in the USA. It's JB Weld, world's strongest bond.
So,
take a
that
guess
car,
how many were made?
106.
Oh, I'm Dick. Going. Yeah, I'm going with Alexander on this one.
Yeah.
All right.
Total production number.
I was asking
including
Chris,
race cars
geez.
And street cars
yeah, 106.
And everything.
It's
some notable owners on this list, by the way. Elon Musk, Rowan Atkinson, didn't he wreck his?
Yep.
Jay twice. Leno, George Harrison, Ralph Lauren, Nick Mason, Sultan of Brunei. Yeah.
And so,
interesting list.
It's a, you know, so here's my thing. So they made 106. Okay, but that's not 14. You know what I mean? It's 106. And our Jag XJ220, is it the XJ220?
Yeah.
Those cars are 425 to 525 kind of all day long.
Yeah.
Look at that car.
It looks pretty good. Yeah.
I mean, I prefer the look of that car over there. I don't prefer the aesthetic of the F1. I don't like the rims that much. I know everything's purpose-built and there for a reason, but you take your average, and so the Jag, 375, 385 or something, they didn't make 2,000 of them,
right.
I don't think. So it's like...
just under 300, I think.
Yeah,
so they made three times as many. So why is it, you know, a million times more expensive?
I mean, the F1, I think when you get in one and you drive it, it is an amazing experience. And I've been fortunate enough to actually really enjoy a couple of those cars, and they really are a special thing to be behind. And when you break down the car and all the components in it and how everything was built and designed and everything, it is a great package. It's the most unbelievable package I've ever seen.
Alexander
in a vehicle.
Showing off. I've driven a few F1s.
Yeah, of course. You've been with a supermodel. You're going to tell everybody about it, right? Like, come on.
282 XJ220s.
Yeah, that's a pretty limited batch. I see, for me, that's an undervalued 90s or late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
Car.
Yeah. Like
that car's 90s. Got some upside. People have gotten over the V6.
What I think is actually a really special thing, we have, and not because we have one in the auction, is the XJR15.
XJR.
It's a Peter Stevens designed car, you know, and that car is, it's what, really what the XJ220 was supposed to be power-wise.
Oh, let's see that car.
Let's see
that. XJR, what'd you call it, 15?
Yeah, XJR15. We have one in Monterey. And unfortunately, the one we have in Monterey is no miles. But, you know, I mean, that to me, that's a great investment. You know, that's, you know, sub $2 million.
Yeah.
But they made 50 of them. And I think there's only 30 or so that were street cars.
Is this one champagne-y or red color?
It's blue.
Oh, I'm way off. But I do remember seeing it in the catalog somewhere.
Most of them were blue.
XJR 15. Alexander's only driven two of them.
I've never driven one. There's a guy here in town that has one and drove it out to Malibu for Cars and Coffee a few weeks ago. Though. I mean, yeah. It's,
there you go. Oh, I did see that. Yeah.
Oh, that car. Yeah. Right, right.
Like, that's an awesome car. And it's a race car at the end of the day.
It is, but it's a little kind of noble, kit car-ish looking, right? It's got a little bit of that.
It's got a little noble to it. But when you find out what it is.
Yeah. So what?
Well, see the full carbon monocoque and everything.
Like, yeah.
It's pretty.
It's so long
it's a race
in the back
car,
for
though.
The engine. Yeah.
Yeah. That's such a cool
piece. What engine is in it?
I think that one's got the V12 that the XJ220 was supposed to have.
Oh, yeah. So it wouldn't have the long rear end with the 6.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
The XJ220 was supposed to have the V12.
Yeah, and so my thing with the 220 is it got out of the gates because of the V6, and Jag is, you know, I mean, Jag's a V12 company and also a straight six company, but the V6 kind of caught people off guard and it got a little stink on it. Now with the Ford GT and the G6, the V6, people are over the kind of stigma of it, like, you know, it can't be a supercar. It's got a V6.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now it can be a supercar with a V6 in it.
And this so is
I'm
cool
still
car.
Disappointed. I'm still kind of bitter and disappointed at Ford for doing that personally.
Yeah.
But
I mean, it performed. It performed.
Oh, no, it's a phenomenal car.
That Jag is cool, but there's no way you roll up anywhere and someone says that's a Jag. Right, like that's kind of the point.
No, but I don't think you get that in the XJ220 either.
No, you don't. But it's like, it's more identifiable now.
Yeah.
You know, like you guys are, you know, we kind of in the same neighborhood. So when you guys move cars around for photography, sometimes I see somebody rolling around in like an XJ220 or something on the back of a truck, and I know you guys photograph your stuff.
That XJ220 in race trim is. That's
a cool
that
car.
May be the sleeper
pretty,
car of that auction.
That's a pretty awesome thing.
And it's probably got Le Mans history based on that collection. I think they
or at least
ran,
some
probably
good
ran
race
the,
history somewhere.
Yeah,
you
good
know.
Euro race history.
Yeah, that is sexy right there.
That is a sexy car, right? Yeah.
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 All right. So then the question is
side profile doesn't.
If something if you take a car like the McLaren F1 and, it, you know, they go up $1 million a year or something. I mean, it's just been going bananas. Do you think, like, if you're an investor, do you go, oh, this is going to keep going bananas? Or do you go, this is kind of a feeding frenzy here, but it's going to come down to earth a little bit?
So I think they've kind of stabilized in the past 3 years or so for the F1s. They've kind of hung in that 18 to 20 range.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's room for those to go. If you look at kind of the two contemporaries are the Mercedes CLK GTR and the Porsche GT1.
I can't believe that car is getting crazy money.
And
I mean, it's cool. But
those cars have come up a lot in the past 2 years.
Yeah.
They deserved it, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the production numbers are significantly less than the F1s. They call it 25 each one of those.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and CLK GTR is a pretty difficult car to drive, though. Like, the F1, you can hop in that, you can go to the grocery store. Like, it's not
that's
a difficult
the crazy Mercedes.
The super wide.
Super long. Yeah, it looks like, I mean, it's a race car.
Yeah, that's exactly.
They put a license plate on it.
And the GT1 is a little easier, though. And you look at those cars, the GT1's over $10 million now. The CLK GTR is $8 to $10 million. Like, you know, and it's based kind of, I think, a little bit on the usability there. But those cars, you know, the CLK GTRs were $4 million 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So they've doubled in the past 3 years, and the F1 hasn't moved.
Right.
Relatively. So,
but it's hard to believe. Like, you look at a car like the F1, as cool as it is, you look at it and go, this car is going to be $30 million.
I think so.
That's just a lot of money.
Well, also, the F1 is dragging up those other cars.
That's what I'm saying. I agree with that. And, you know, if you look at kind of the three, I call it, you know, when you really want to talk about the three best cars ever made and kind of the three most sought after cars, you look at an Alpha 8C, you look at a 250 GTO, and you look at a McLaren F1. The first two that I mentioned are significantly more than the F1. And I think as time goes on, you know, some of the value may come out of those other two and go into the F1 even.
Yeah. No GTOs this year at Monterey is if memory serves. No.
Yeah.
All right. Let me hit AirMed Care Network one more time. Health insurance doesn't always cover the full cost of an emergency medical flight. Even with comprehensive coverage, you could get hit with substantial copays and deductibles. Plan ahead in an emergency. AirMed Care Network's highly trained crew will provide air medical transport to the nearest, most appropriate trauma center. With AirMed Care Network membership, you pay no out-of-pocket expenses for the flight, and AMCN membership covers your entire household for as little as $85 a year. That's everyone in your household. So you can secure your financial peace of mind for just $85 a year. CarCast listeners get up to a $50 e-gift card with a new membership. So visit airmedcarenetwork.com/CarCast. Use the promo code CarCast. That's airmedcarenetwork.com. Well, Alexander, always fun and informative.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's always fun to come in and chat.
Yeah, if you have a few minutes, we can walk by the other shop and kick a tire or two.
It's mostly white.
And I'm going to be everywhere, so just go to adamcarolla.com. I'm doing stand-up shows all over the damn place. And you can check out our Pluto TV channel, our chassis channel, Pluto TV. We got tons of great automotive content there, and it's all free at 687. The website, rmsotheby's.com, is where you go. Instagram at Weaver Garage, if you want to reach out to Alexander. Matt, what do you have?
Just follow me at Motor Raider, especially as we get up to Monterey. We'll be posting some good stuff up there.
So until next time, it's Adam Kroll for Alexander Weaver and Matt the Motor Raider, DeAndrea, saying keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Hey movie lovers, who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.